When our heart is in a holy place, we are blessed with love and amazing grace. When our heart is in a holy place. Isn't this why we come to church? To be in the presence of that which is holy and good. And there is something about this particular place. I feel it, and some of you have told me you do too. I think it has to do with the fact that people have been gathering here and praying here for such a long time now. And of course, I include you in that. What you bring here, your longing to be in touch with the Spirit, the heart you bring to singing and to seeing one another, how you light candles, how you are present here. You help make this a holy place. And Nate, not to put you on the spot or anything, but the heart you bring to your playing here, that makes such a difference, for which I and we are so grateful. A few months ago, on a Sunday when one of you was here for the first time, I could tell you were moved by being here. And after the service at coffee hour, you said something to me like, "I'm here because I'm tired of trying to pray all by myself." That was one of the loveliest things I've ever heard a newcomer say. It was so open and honest and vulnerable, and I received it as a precious gift. And I hope this is a place and a community where this person and all of you do feel held and companioned, where you know others are with you, are praying with you, and are working with you, and are seeing you and beholding you. Of course, church is not the only place one can experience the holy. You're more likely to find it outdoors. You see this in the stories in the Bible. Whenever people encounter God, they're almost never in the temple. They're out on the sea, or they're in the wilderness, or in the desert, maybe in a gathering with a few other people, usually not in church. The Native American black elk that he once described a mystical experience he had standing on top of a high mountain, he said, "I saw that it was holy." He said it was like the center of the world. But then he said, "But anywhere can be the center of the world." That's one thing I think we all can agree on here, that anywhere can be holy. And there are many ways to be in touch with what is sacred. The Sufi mystic Rumi said, "There are hundreds of ways to kneel and kiss the ground." The trouble is, it seems that people are less and less able to do this, to access this life-giving source of power and presence, grace, less able to be in touch with that kind of holy place. And isn't it obvious that in our increasingly technological and artificial world, that is part of the problem? I mean, tell the truth. Have you ever had a religious experience watching the news or scrolling through Facebook? I mean, every now and then maybe you come across something in all the stuff that gets shared on Facebook that is inspiring or heart-opening. But awe and wonder, the kind you get from lying on your back under a dark and starry summer sky, or from holding the tiniest little baby. Those experiences come firsthand in the flesh and blood and in the stuff of this world, right? Not on your phone or on your computer. This is what our reading was talking about this morning from George Monbiot. Some of you might find this hard to believe, but I think he knows what he's talking about. It's no longer rare to meet adults who have never swum except in a swimming pool, never slept except in a building, never run a mile or climbed a mountain, never been stung by a bee or wasp, never broken a bone or needed stitches. Without a visceral knowledge of what it is to be hurt and healed, exhausted and resolute, freezing and ecstatic, we lose our reference points. We are separated from the world by a layer of glass. Some would respond, "This is just the world we live in now. Don't be such a Luddite." But just because we have this amazing technology doesn't mean that we have learned how to use it in healthy and life-giving ways. I love how the poet David White pushes back against this so-called progress in his poem called Loaves and Fishes. This is not the age of information. This is not the age of information. Forget the news and the radio and the blurred screen. This is the time of loaves and fishes. People are hungry, and one good word is bread for 1,000. I am hungry, and I suspect you are hungry too. Our hearts long to be in a holy place. And you might ask, where is that place? And how do I get there from here? In his poem, David White is thinking about the gospel story of Jesus and his disciples feeding the 5,000. We know from the gospel that Jesus had this power. People felt something in his presence. They felt seen. They felt alive. They found an unexpected sense of hope that healing and liberation were possible. And aren't we just as hungry for that now, 2,000 years later? Hungry for that kind of liberating presence? Maybe even more so, because we are surrounded by so much information, so much that we are invited to consume. We are offered in this society with so many choices. It can be paralyzing. And I wonder how much of all this is good for us, how much of it truly satisfies. On Friday morning of this week, I woke up really early, actually in the middle of the night, in warm and humid New Orleans and boarded a flight for home. I had been at our denomination's annual convention, which this year was in New Orleans, and there are still thousands of Unitarian Universalists gathered there right now. Today's the last day, and their worship service, at which a friend of mine is preaching, is just wrapping up about now. I'm going to probably watch it later online. It was lovely to be there, and it was lovely to come home. But on Friday, during the daylight hours, I fasted, because it was in the last days of the season of Ramadan in the Islamic tradition. And as I said earlier, I was going to break that fast on Friday night with our friends down the street. But I have to confess, I didn't keep a complete fast. I didn't eat, but I did have a cup of tea in the afternoon, and I drank water. I asked one of the folks at the temple, "How do you do that, go all day without water?" He said, "Well, you can put it in your mouth, you just can't go below here," which I didn't know that. You can rinse your mouth out, you just aren't supposed to swallow. But he said, if you swallow by accident, we our theology says, well, that is a gift from God. And I appreciate that sense of flexibility about it, but I'll tell you, that cup of tea I had at about 5 o'clock, that was a gift from God. Especially the milk and the sugar that was in it. But there is something about fasting. There is something about silence and solitude. These practices can help to strip away that which separates us and insulates us from both our feelings and from the world. It's about presence and connection. And isn't that what we are really hungry for? The invitation is to make a practice of paying attention to what's right in front of you. And if she was here, my wife would tell you, there is no one in this room that needs to hear that message more than me. One Jesuit theologian says, contemplation is simply this, taking a long, loving look at what is real. A long, loving look at what is real. A week from now, not long after church, I'll be departing for Montana and Wyoming for about a week of hiking and fishing all by myself. Out there, I'll get up early and head out for the day. Usually we'll hike for an hour or two until I reach a section of river that's far enough from the road that it's likely nobody else will be there. At that elevation, it will be cool in the morning, but because it's midsummer in that part of the world, it'll be hot by mid-afternoon. I'll probably get some blisters on my feet from hiking, and my knees and elbows might get banged up from clambering over slippery rocks. I'm hoping that my fingers will be lacerated from unhooking and releasing many trout. Those sharp little teeth. And of course, it's bear country out there, which certainly can help to focus one's attention. I feel so fortunate that I get to do this. And at the same time, it feels almost essential to me, to my well-being. Do you know what I mean? Not necessarily about the fishing and hiking, which I'm sure some of you think is strange, but getting to experience directly this world and that which animates it. For many of us, summer offers a more spacious time, a good time to practice getting out of your usual routine and paying attention and being open to that larger presence. The poet Marie Howe wrote a book of poems, the title of which grabbed me when I heard it. It's called The Kingdom of Ordinary Time. She's mindful of the pressures we face these days to have more of a relationship with our phones and tablets, TVs and computers than we do with the real world. She understands how these devices can be comforting in the way they filter reality and insulate us from that which is painful and real. In words I put at the top of the order of service today, she says, this might be the most difficult task for us in postmodern life, not to look away from what is actually happening, to put down the iPod and the email and the phone, to look long enough so that we can look through it like a window. When I'm out on my solitary trip, I'll get lonely sometimes. I can tell when I've started missing human contact, when I start chatting some stranger up at a gas station. But I'm more than willing to pay the price of some loneliness for this deep immersion in that real world, which is mostly unchanged once you get away from the road, from the way it has been for thousands of years. In that different landscape, my eyes are wide open, and it's not hard to look or pay attention. It's more challenging, I think, when we are in our everyday lives, where we spend most of our time in ordinary time. There are so many distractions, right? Especially these days, so many devices like shiny objects calling to us, saying, look at me, pay attention to me. But as our reading this morning warned, spending time in this virtual world separates us from what is tangible and real. We can start to diminish real suffering if we only ever experience it through the TV or the internet. It can seem so removed if you're not able to see it and smell it and touch it. My question for you as we enter this summer season is this: how are you going to spend this gift, this day, and this season? Will you take the time to seek what you are missing, what you are hungry for? Might you take a true Sabbath day, or even a Sabbath week, when you turn off your computer and set down your phone so you can take a long, loving look at what is right in front of you? So you can be bored, even. How about making a daily practice of when you wake in the morning, sitting in silence for a while or praying for a while before you ever look at any electronic device? I have to warn you, what you probably already know is that being present to what is real won't be all happiness and bliss. Sometimes it will mean sitting with discomfort and pain. The invitation is to see what is beautiful and what is ugly, and to stay with it, to resist the urge to run away or look away, to see it in greater depth and complexity, to notice your own responses, to hang in there, to let it become a window to something deeper. To look long enough so you do get to the holy and hidden heart of things. To see through this window that invites you to a deeper way of seeing and knowing, where you can see that you are part of the whole, that we are interconnected and interdependent, that even with all its pain and suffering and its beauty, life is good, that this place, wherever you are, is holy. Amen.